Welcome, welcome. We are back for another episode of The Lock-In. I'm David Lappin, and I am joined by Dara Streaky O'Kearney, a moniker I believe you earned, Dara, by cashing 9 tournaments in a row last weekend, and not as some reports have suggested, because you ran naked around the Bonington Hotel.
No, indeed not. I wasn't even aware of the streak until Andy Black brought it to my attention, and then I counted up the number of tournaments, and at that stage it was 7, I think, and then I cashed my next 2 as well. It led to a lot of fun. People just accusing me of folding into the money 9 times in a row. Strictly speaking, not true. I did actually win one of those tournaments, and I made a couple of other final tables. But you know, people believe what they believe.
Yeah, it wasn't John Cena going out in the Oscars to with no clothes on. Anyway, it was definitely the other kind of streak. And fair play. The poker world had its own Oscars. Look at that segue. Just a couple of weeks ago, the GPI Global Poker Awards took place in the PokerGo studio in Las Vegas. And our guest this week was the most nominated person at those awards. She was up for 3 and took down 1, very deserving, in the category of Best Short Form Content Creator. She is poker player, podcaster, and comedian, Caitlin Comiskey. Caitlin, welcome back.
Thank you for having me. Happy to be here.
So great to have you on this show, Caitlin. We obviously had you on the chip race, I think maybe a year ago, when you were probably winning awards then as well. I don't know. We just get you on when it's award season. This might seem like old news, but we never actually covered the awards on this show yet. So when we booked you, we thought, well, this is a good opportunity to weigh in on them a little bit. 2022's rising star in content creation, who crushed it again in 2023. I hope I've got your prizes correct. I'm sure you have them there in the mantle. There's been a lot of talk since about how these awards could be changed. I actually tuned in to several podcasts weighing in this fashion. More player awards, some categories being split so that there's a greater recognition maybe of, maybe not comparing things that aren't like for like, I suppose, is the best way of putting that one. And then more nominations for non-Americans. I agree with all that, but the big one for me is recognizing up-and-coming talent. Caitlin, you won Rising Stars, I said, there in 2022. And as I mentioned, that category, that was discontinued. And if anything, I would almost say, like, have Rising Star categories in nearly all the content creation categories, for the simple reason that some categories are... they're always like the same 4 or 5 vloggers or the same 4 or 5 streamers or even podcasts. And established people don't really gain all that much from recognition, whereas I feel like it would be a bigger deal for the breakout creators and benefit them much more. They would feel encouraged. What say you?
Well, there's definitely been a lot of talk about the GPI awards as more like an industry awards. And I mean, like, that's what they are, you know? And I don't think that they were pretending to be something else. So I think the, you know, feedback and the encouragement that maybe they could be something that is more ready for the fans to engage with. I feel like a lot of the feedback that they're getting based on like more awards for poker players, cash players need to be recognized. Some of the content awards are like overlapping in weird ways. Or, the international field, it's like hard to get them to come in and accept awards. So when the international, like you guys won this year and you're not going to travel to Vegas just to accept your trophy. So then that sort of takes away some of the specialness of the awards if that people aren't coming to receive them. So I get
you think they would have been more special if we did.
That's exactly what I said. This award means nothing because Chip Race wasn't here to accept their awards, but you weren't the only ones not there. Like Ben Wynn wasn't there. There were lots of other people that weren't there. Marley didn't cross the pond to accept her award for best Twitter personality either. I'm just sort of parroting or echoing some of the other sentiments or criticisms that I've heard of the awards. I knew what they were. I knew what I was getting into. I knew how they were voted. And so I was happy to be at a networking event. Like both years I've been up for awards, I've decided to go. And that was an investment in my career. Like they don't fly you out there. They don't get you a room. So it's on you to like seize it as an opportunity to get in front of people who have, you know, the power and influence to write you check and support your work. So that's how I've always seen them. But I definitely understand people wanting to like engage the audience more and some of the criticisms that they've received. But That's kind of how I feel about it. I went to a networking party and I networked. And when they gave me the microphone, I tried my best to be funny.
And you really were, actually. Your contribution on the mic was probably the highlight, both in your acceptance and when they went down into the pit to talk to you all. Dara, coming back to, I suppose, what maybe is more our bugbear, the dearth of non-American nominees. I know that we've said in previous years about this problem, but it does still feel like the balance isn't quite right. Firstly, poker is massive in America, bigger than it is anywhere else. So I would expect to see American players and content creators and industry people dominate. But it is important to point out that poker in Europe and South America and Asia is absolutely massive. It's booming right now. And it would be lovely to see a bit more recognition of that. To put it in percentage terms, because I am a bit nerdy on this stuff, since they separated the European awards and American awards and kind of mushed them together for the Global Poker Awards 6 years ago, there have been 332 nominations, 254 of which have gone to North Americans. That's 76.5%. 62 to Europeans for 18.5%. And maybe the biggest issue, just 22 to the rest of the world for just 5%. Would you like to see a better split?
Yeah, for sure. And I think actually, you know, maybe Europeans are a little bit underrepresented, but not all that much, really. It's the other continents which I think have the biggest bugbear. I think a lot of that's down to just the people they ask to vote. I mean, we're both asked for our votes, and presumably lots of other Euros are as well. But I don't know how many South Americans are asked, or Australians, or Asians. That's undoubtedly an issue. I mean, the fact that the awards are in Vegas, obviously, you know, that kind of makes sense, because that's where the highest congregation of nominees and winners is. But at the same time, the fact that it's always there does kind of make it feel like more like an American awards than a truly global event. I think at the very least, they could maybe think about having sort of like two venues on the simulcast or something. I would certainly have flown to London if that had been an option. I mean, preferably I'd prefer it to be, you know, in my local parish hall, but that's probably unlikely to happen, as nice as my parish hall is. But I completely accept Kitten's point. It is a little bit deflating for an awards show when a lot of the people aren't there. It looks, to people who don't know, either a little bit disrespectful or degrading of the awards. People are saying it's not important enough to go. I mean, that's not the issue. It's just I'm not going to fly 32-hour round trip to collect to collect an award, or to sit in the audience looking awkward as Berkey goes up to collect the award. either way, but you know, at the same time, I don't want to over-criticize them. They do a great job overall, and it's great that they do shine a spotlight on different parts of the industry. And I think they are trying to address the other stuff. It's just, you know, the people. If 75% of the people who vote are Americans, it's just natural that most of the nominees and winners will be Americans.
Yeah, and my hunch is it's probably not even 70. Like, I'd say the split is maybe more balanced, but actually, like, lots of Europeans love the Americans because, in fairness, they do great content. People like yourself, Caitlin.
I think that when we're critical of these entities within poker, like the GPI Awards, poker new, other poker media outlets, we forget how small our world really is relative to, you know, a market share of something bigger. Like, if we were in the NFL, then yeah, we'd have top nose investigative journalists. We'd have, you know, very large and overreaching like award entities that, you know, can be fair and balanced. But as far as I can tell, the GPI Awards is like three dudes, you know, like putting together an event and like partnering with Poker Go, but it's not like a huge company. There's not like a ton of oversight. And I think, like, with recently a story here in America was Maurice Hawkins is one of like the foremost ring winners. And he did an interview with Cairo, who's a content creator. He didn't go to journalism school. And Cairo got so much pushback that like he wasn't pushing enough. He wasn't asking the right questions. And they were holding him to the standards of like an NYT reporter. And I'm like, dude, he's making TikToks. Like, this is what, yeah. Like, we're an insulated community, and we just don't have the resources and the standards that we can hold up to something else. So I don't know, part of me thinks that there's a portion of this where we need to do a better job of managing our expectations as an audience of a niche as niche as poker. You know, to play poker, you have to have disposable income. Like, that just takes out such a huge portion of the world. And we have to remember how insular we are when we criticize our entities like that, I think.
No, I thank you for that reality check. I think you're absolutely right. We do take ourselves far too seriously. Although I will say that the moment you said we don't have any top-notch investigative journalists, I do think I can hear Joey Ingham crying in the background now. I think you may have broken.
Joey didn't go to journalism school, though. You know, Joey's a content creator and a podcast host. He's, you know, and he's a personality first and foremost, and he does Absolutely. Amazing at what he does. And I think he's really good at getting people to work together and cooperate. And he's done great work in the investigative space, finding people that know the best. And we have David Hill, who won the Writing GPI Award. He is a bona fide journalist. He's done work for, I think, I don't want to speak out of turn, but like very major publications, and he's a great person who cares about gambling, who writes in our space.
Yeah, and he gave a beautiful speech as well, and it was great mm-hmm. to see him pick up his award, very deserving as well. I have to say, I did reach out to Eric Denny to ask him about this subject, to which he answered, the US dominates the poker sphere, so I think it's normal that more Americans get nominated. Do I wish that more deserving candidates from outside of the US would receive more recognition? Absolutely. But I also feel that it's disrespectful to those final nominees to say that they're not deserving of their nomination. Caitlin, to come back to you for a final word, maybe on this. Eric and his team put so much work into this night every year, and we are grateful. No question. We're so grateful to him for that. It does shine a spotlight in a fantastic way. I think a lot of very deserving people got nominated and won awards on the night, yourself included. Is there anybody, however, that you feel didn't get noticed and maybe should have?
You know, the best friend in me wishes that they had the Rising Star and Content Creation Award again, because I think my best friend Nikki would have totally been, you know, a great candidate for a nomination and a win in that category. She moved from the general YouTube space into poker, and this last year, you know, she got a lot of opportunities, and I think she did really well. And her big game episodes are coming out that she's doing with Poker Stars. So I'm excited for more people to get exposure about that. And I do think that the fact that there are no cash players recognized, and that's like probably the bigger chunk of recreational players are playing cash than tournament. So maybe that would be a way to get people excited more about cash, is recognizing some performances in cash poker. But you know, cash poker is messy, you know. Cash poker is gambling, cash poker is like home game, hush hush, you know, sex, drugs, and rock and roll. So it makes sense that they kind of keep it focused on the tournament for like, you know, a glitzy buttoned up award. But I've been incredibly grateful to Eric and his team in the GPI Awards. Like, they've recognized me 2 years in a row. It's given me great opportunities to get my name out there and to continue to network and grow. And I have every faith that they're going to take the feedback that they're getting this year and make it even bigger and better. And I honestly thought they did a really good job. And I, you know, it's almost like the year, I don't know how y'all felt, but it's like the year we win an award and then everyone's like, this award, like, have something negative to say about it. It's like, oh gosh, well.
Yeah, well, that happens every year, in fairness. It doesn't matter whether you win or not. Every single year. And actually, it's probably one of the biggest pleasures I get out of the awards this year. It's about them afterwards. Because they're usually variations on a theme. On the subject of tournaments versus cash, again, like, that's quite an American perspective, because in Europe, you know, tournaments are 80 to 90% of the scene, and cash is a much smaller portion. And also the same is true online. And actually, one of the criticisms leveled at them is that it's very much sort of live poker is the only poker as far as the GPI awards are concerned. There's no online recognition. The very fact that Graf Tekel got best breakout is hilarious to me. He has been one of the best players in the world for at least 10 years, but he's broken out because he went out and he played live a bit.
Yeah, just because he got hassled by Kessler as well. I like that little wrinkle to the whole thing too. Caitlin, once again, you won the trophy for short form content creator, a new category this year, which separates short sketches or bits, I guess, that are very social media friendly from longer content. Your sketches are hysterical, and it's such a treat when you drop a new one, especially if it means you're going to do some impressions. We had Greg Liao on the Chip Race a few weeks ago, and he talked about his creative process. Can you talk a little bit about yours specifically when hatching these sketches?
Usually the first thing that happens is I just find something interesting or funny, like naturally as it's existing. Like that's how the first one, you know, watching Joey Ingram's 12-hour live streams and all the different characters that fell through. There was like Robbie, there were the Solve for Y kids who were just the Solve for Y kids back then to me. And then like Marley, who had been a little tipsy that night. And it was just like, I was like, this could be a Christopher Guest movie. Like, this is so funny to me. And then it was like around Halloween time. So I just like really on a whim, just like went and executed and made it happen and didn't really overthink it too much. So I think not overthinking it is always led me to be more successful. Sometimes the thing that stops me from making new content is I get like a bunch of negative comments about like my appearance. And I just like, I don't want to have to deal with that. Like I'm trying to play poker at a high level. I don't want to have to deal with that. So it'll slow me down on the content front just because I'm like, I got bigger fish to fry. I don't need to deal with all that.
Yeah, you had a great line, actually. We had dinner a few weeks ago at the actually, it was during the Wynn. It was during the mm-hmm. WPT event at the Wynn. And you said something, I think it was at the table to us that night. You said, my bust out isn't your content, which I quite liked.
I was complaining because someone had like was just like filming my bust out hand and like narrating my bust out while I was living it. And it was pretty gross too. Like I got it in so good. And she like hit a 80-20 split on me or something, you know. And I was really pissy about that. Yeah. I was like, go be funny, go make something. Don't just wait for me to fail.
Well, Dara, we had Sarah Herring on the lock-in a few months ago, and we talked to her about the growth of fast media, or I suppose instant media, as she put it. Sarah is head of instant media at poker.org. We also see Tiffany Michelle doing that sort of coverage. I guess it's akin to sideline reporting, but it also does incorporate these funny bits as well. You and I have been in poker almost 20 years, and we have seen how coverage of the game and the media around the game, I suppose, as well, has evolved. Obviously, instant media is catering to a younger audience, but also maybe a modern audience of all ages who now consume fast content via their phones. Is there, however, a pitfall of which to be wary here? What I mean is, whatever about entertainment pieces, there is a danger maybe that tailoring news pieces in this sort of buzzy 30-second bang, bang, bang kind of way means the focus goes on the negative and salacious and maybe overly simplistic. And maybe those takes on what happens are the only ones that really get airtime. Your thoughts?
My immediate reaction to that is if like you think that the major media outlets aren't doing that, the New York, like, I don't know sure. what y'all read in Ireland, but like New York Times, Los Angeles Times, USA Today, CNN, all the major news outlets, that's how they market and package news.
We only have broadsheets in Ireland, Caitlin. I don't know what kind of, is this like magazines that you guys read? I'm not sure.
Yeah, we get them at the dentist. That's how we get our news.
Yeah, my immediate thought there was that you were setting me up to sound like a complete boomer in my response. I mean, that's just the way the world is now. We have to kind of accept that, and there's no point in railing against this. People consume short content much more than they do long content. There's obviously still a place, but I think other parts of the poker world, you know, like podcasts, you know, we're actually quite short and snappy compared to most poker podcasts. That's one area where there's a lot of long form content. Obviously, Twitch is another one where people will watch a guy clicking buttons for 8 hours just because he's shouting about Brazilian bots or whatever. Shout out to Grafganger. And that's very entertaining too. I think it all has its place, and it's driven by demand. So I don't think we can really complain too much about it. These are all commercial enterprises, and they have to follow the dollar.
Well, coming back to Poker Org, Caitlin, specifically, I see that you partner with them on occasion to bring a player's perspective, I suppose, on various tournament series going on. That seems like a match made in heaven, actually. In Poker Org's mission statement, they say they represent the independent voice of poker players and believe that an independent media company is necessary to shape the future because the opinions and views of poker players are important. Can you talk a bit about your partnership with them and what you think you bring to each other?
So I loved my work. I've done two stints with them so far. I did a week at the Wynn with them, and I did another one in Borgata, where I sort of partner on content with them, and they've been really great about giving me the freedom to experiment with like what does well with their audience and my audience. But I'm there as like a featured creator, so I have the freedom to make sketches, day in the life vlogs, a lifestyle vlog. And then in Borgata, I wasn't doing as well in poker, so like making vlogs on my own journey wasn't really an option because I just kept busting out. So I experimented with like actually reporting on other hands in the main and catching the action. And I made one mistake, my first mistake, but I think I'm gonna get a handle on it. It's fun to do that as well and just like highlight other big pots and catch those moments in the tournament that sometimes just like live in the pub, as y'all would say, and bring them out. The Poker Org has always said that they want to be like a fly on the wall. So I think that that's very important to them, to be like visual first, video first, photo first, and really immersive in the content. It's what Tiffany does and a lot of their other collaborators, really like getting you behind the scenes so that you feel like you're there. And then they still like when we're deep in a significant event that they're covering, like it's all business. The chip counts are going to be correct. The hand reporting is going to be correct. They're going to be buttoned up and they're going to be giving you the best coverage that they can, but definitely that they're going with this social media first push that I think is good for the casual viewer to get them in, who's not ever going to be just looking at the dry chip counts and hand histories.
Yeah, and I hope to see loads more from you on that front. I hope that partnership continues, because I do think that there are certain people in the industry who are just perfect for that sort of role, where they are that conduit maybe between entertainment and a bit of news coverage, or you know, you can send them in the direction of maybe the longer form stuff by being so funny in the shorter form stuff, which attracts the eye. Turning now to some live poker going on around the world, I want to firstly give a shout out here to another recent recipient of Chip Race Run Good, Soheb Porbandarwala. Just a few days ago, he raffle stumped the WSOP Circuit Main in Chicago for $250,000, right on the heels of his GG Millions Overlay Edition win for 670K 10 days or so previous to that. Absolutely incredible stuff from Soheb. Can't say enough about how good a player he is. Moving on to poker in Europe, specifically Dublin, where for the last 10 days or so, Dara, there was the Dublin Poker Festival that we mentioned there. I mentioned your great run of form, obviously, at the top. I think you've cashed maybe 15 times already in 2024. It actually might be a bigger number than that. Another man on his own streak is former guest of the Chip Race, Thomas Skilatsounis, who went back to back in the European Deep Stacks defending his title last Sunday. Tommy G, as he's known in poker circles, won this event in 2023, outlasting 559 other players to win 53K. And this year, he beat 466 players to take down the title and 44K. You were there in the Bonington. I know you finished 10th in the main, so sorry to throw any salt your way here. I know that was probably a bit of a nasty crossbar, but you did obviously have lots of other deep runs. Can you tell us a little bit about that tournament and maybe also a few of the other winners over the weekend?
Yeah, the European Deep Stack is kind of unique. Like when it came on the scene in 2008, its big selling point at the time, you know, pretty much no tournament in Europe started more than 100 big blinds deep. And this tournament came along the scene and everybody started with 1,000 big blinds. And it was a very slow tournament as well. And down the years, it's kind of been a who's who of Irish poker in terms of winners. Obviously, I lockboxed the first one. The second year, Wally McCormack and Jason Tompkins chopped it. And then since then, a lot of the top Irish players have won it at least once. Cathal Shiner won it. Paddy Clark won it. And last year, Lucky Mo added his name to the list. But Going back to back is just amazing, because I mean you're talking about two tournaments that had over 500. Well, the first one had over 500 runners. The second had just under 500 runners, and like last year was Mo's big breakout live. It was his first big live win, And just to go back to back is just phenomenal. But, you know, as we went down to the last few tables, there was quite a few winners still, previous winners still in the mix. And there was a lot of talk about, you know, would somebody become the first two-time winner? And for it to be Mo, who had actually won last year, is just phenomenal. There was a huge outpouring when he won. Everybody just kind of rushed up to the table, kind of recognizing it was a fairly unique achievement. Overall, the festival was very, very well organized. I mean, I've said this already, and I have a piece coming out in Vegas Slots Online. The seniors tournament is the Irish Seniors Championship is undoubtedly the best structured seniors tournament I've played anywhere outside of Vegas. Seniors tournaments are usually not greatly structured, and at the Dublin Poker Festival they put a lot of effort into improving the structure, and they've been really rewarded. Like, seniors tournaments typically get 30-40 runners in this part of the world. This got over 250. And that was an increase from last year. It was a record for a seniors tournament in Ireland, and much bigger than the EPT typically gets. And then they had the amateur championship, the so-called amateur championship poker, which is a bit of a misnomer because everybody just plays it, ACOP. But that was a success as well. And then they had a high roller, which featured Mark McDonald getting heads up against Peralta, the Italian who lives in Ireland now, Art House Online, I believe. And so, yeah, there were a lot of winners. And then my star student, as I call him, Rafe Wheatley, who we've talked about before on the show, came to me after he, in his words, luckboxed his way to the final table of the Irish Open and felt completely and utterly outclassed when he got there. And his first words to me were, I'm a terrible player and I'm never going to be much better, but I want to be as close to good as I can get. He's actually on a bit of a heater of his own now. He took down the main side event at the Dublin Poker Festival, the 300, and then immediately hopped into the 200 and got heads up in that as well. So he's on a real heater as well. And, you know, it's coming into a very busy time on the calendar, the busiest time of the year for Irish poker, because obviously the Irish Open is the big one, and that's only a couple of weeks away now. But even before that, we have the 100 for 100 Irish Poker Tour stop on Paddy's Day in a few days. So it's a real push. I think there was a lot of talk about why the numbers were down as well at the Dublin Poker Festival, which they were. I think part of it is just it's such a crowded calendar now. I mean, three major events in the same month, and more crucially for recreational players on the same paycheck. That's probably just a bit too much. And then, you know, that particular event sponsorship changed from Unibet to GG. GG are obviously a much bigger site than Unibet, but their ground game doesn't seem particularly good. There just doesn't seem to be the same amount of buzz or positive marketing around it as in previous years. I think the lack of the live stream as well affected things. That just makes the event feel a little bit less special and prestigious. It was particularly sad that there was no live stream there to record Thomas's amazing achievement of going back to back.
Yeah, that is a shame. I almost thought you were going to say that it's the fact that I'm not there is what's kind of makes it just takes away something from it, that I'm not there in Unibet colors.
Yeah,
you weren't almost saying that, were you? Or no, you weren't?
I was never saying that in any way.
Okay, just to make sure. Okay, thanks. Turning back to you, Caitlin, for some poker in the USFA. A couple of weeks ago, you were in Tunica for the Run Good series. You came third in the deep stack and you won the ladies event. It's also been an excellent start to your year. I saw you also took second in an event at Doug Polk's wacky weekend of poker in the Lodge, and you came 15th for a very tidy score in the Champions Cup in Houston. Zooming in, though, on the Run Good series, we interviewed Hayley Hochstetler a little while back and we talked about this brand Run Good, which really manages to successfully inject the fun into poker. Herself and Tana bring their personalities, I know, to proceedings as well. I believe there's a good amount of partying at those tops. All in all, everyone who attends tends to talk about what a good time they've had. Can you talk a bit about Tunica and maybe the other Run Good events you've attended? I know you've attended quite a few.
Yeah, so this is my second year or third season as a Poker Run Good ambassador. And I've been having such a fun time on the trip. You know, we go to a lot of smaller stops. I don't leave a casino building for a week. I play 14 hours of poker a day for 5 days straight. And the great thing about these untapped markets that haven't gone major yet is that poker's still fun there. You know, people are still drinking at the table. People are still talking. There aren't a lot of hoodies and headphones and stuff. So in a way, it's sort of a time capsule of, you know, the moneymaker boom era is still alive and well in Tunica, Mississippi, Kansas City, Council Bluffs, Iowa, Tulsa, Oklahoma. So many great spots. I'm going to Jacksonville for the first time. And yeah, there's a fair amount of partying. I'd say in Kansas City, that was probably tantamount of the partying that I've done in any of them. I did not win money on that stuff. So I've been trying to rein it in a little bit, but I definitely still like to have fun with the locals and order some drinks at the table and maybe take a round of shots after we book a W.
Nice. Well, speaking of live events that you're attending, it's not long now, I know, before it's all aboard the good ship WPT for a poker cruise. Darren and I both get seasick, so I'm not sure that we're going to be too envious of you about this one, but it does sound like a lot of fun. Can you tell us a little bit about it? I saw your very funny promo ad comedy bit on social media last week.
You know what's funny is I sent them another video before that they did not like. So that was my second idea.
Oh, please tell us what was in the other one.
I just like went with like kind of a Jackass thing, you know, the show in America where they like get hurt and it's funny. I was just like doing a normal, like straight faced bit. And then I like ran into a wall and I was just like in a lot of pain. And surprisingly, the client did not like me in pain around their product. It was like so weird. No, but I like to tell that story. But it was great because then I knew what they wanted and I was like, oh, great. I could take a note. Let's go. But yes, I'm so excited for the WPT cruise. It's the first time they're taking over the whole ship. 1.5 million in guarantees. Like, we're going to the Bahamas. We're leaving out of Miami, Grand Cayman. I've never been there. I got my passport ready for the stamps. Let's go.
Dara, despite Caitlin's enthusiasm there, all I can think about is when Unibet made us get on a catamaran for a sort of a social thing about maybe 4 years ago here in Malta, and both of us had to be taken off the boat midway through this. What was that? Probably only like a 90 minute cruise around the sort of inlets around the bays in Malta, and Tara and I had to get rescued from it.
Aww, such it soft even, boys, like, such soft tender boys.
we explained to them that, well, I'm particularly seasick, like I'm just absolutely dreadful and that stuff, and it was like, yeah, I'll definitely get seasick. And they were like, how can you get seasick? You're just going out a little bit into the Mediterranean, which is basically a lake in name, and then we'll just bring you back. And I was like, pretty sure I'm still going to get sick. And yeah, sure enough, they had to. It was very embarrassing because they had to send out one of these little boats for us. So we had to be like the two kids who've been bad, who have been sent home from the school trip early, get on the little boat. Also quite sickening, I have to say. And we weren't out there for very long at all. But yeah, very, very sick.
I'm not too worried about seasickness on a giant cruise vessel. It's not like we're going through the Drake's Passage or anything. I think we'll be okay.
Yeah, no, my memory from that one was we, like, Darren and I were two of like four people who were basically meant to be ambassadors on that and walking around and shaking hands and being nice to everyone. Dara spent the entire trip in the bathroom, and I spent the entire trip right outside the bathroom, hoping he would eventually leave the bathroom so I could use the bathroom. Yeah. It was all pretty grim.
Well, you know, we're from Ireland. We're not exactly a seafaring nation, so.
Indeed. Okay, well, before we get off the topic of live poker, there is a rather big one going down on the South Korean island of Jeju right now. The Triton Series is on about a week, I want to say, and there's more than a week still to go. Winners so far include Adrian Mosbach, Roland Rakita, and former guest Federer Holtz. And Adrian Mateos. Dara, I know you don't watch a ton of live stream poker, but you do watch a little bit of the Triton streams. It's obviously very entertaining as a poker fan, but how effective a form of study is watching these elite players battle in the high rollers?
Yeah, I think it's pretty effective. I mean, we had Chipre's guest Laurina Slavinskas tell us on the Chipre's once that a lot of his study in the early days came down to just watching the online beasts on final table replays. And this is kind of the live equivalent. You'll often see new plays which, you know, have just been discovered in the solvers, and they first manifest themselves at that level. You also see it's fairly unique in that you obviously have the best players in the world, and then you have recreationals, and just the dynamic how that affects, you know, when one of the recreationals enters the pot, it's a very, very different scenario from when the recreations have all folded. So it's quite interesting on that front. On Triton in general is quite interesting as well, because it seemed like there was a period where they were trying to do sort of the old full tilt model of this is high stakes poker and shine a spotlight on it. And now they seem a lot more publicity shy. And I've heard from people who sort of play in that circuit that a lot of that has now come down to the fact that they kind of want to keep the player pool that they have, and they don't want any more. It's kind of like there's too many people trying to get in now, so they're at the stage now where they really don't need the publicity. They've achieved what they set out to achieve, which was be the sort of higher order circuit. And now I wonder if we're actually going to see kind of, you know, become more and more private, and maybe just disappear behind closed doors, like a lot of the big stakes live cash games do.
Yeah, or just bump up the buy-ins even higher. I suppose when they have a 15K and a 20K, that's not so crazy. It's obviously still a high roller, but like it's not so wild for guys to maybe consider taking shots in those ones. And then they end up there, and maybe, you know, they end up getting staked into the 30K because there is a decent number of recs in the mix. I do wonder if maybe the exclusivity aspect of what they are always pushing for there on that brand is being pushed up against, a bit like what you said there. There may be no need now to do much more advertising. Caelan, what types of study do you do mostly? Yeah, you know, maybe you watch some live streams, but do you use training apps? Are you in the lab doing your own solves? Are you bouncing hands around in chat groups?
I'm definitely not doing my own solves, but I am a GTO subscriber and user. I use their training, their drill function a ton. Lately, I've been focusing on blind v blind play, MTT at the different stack depths. And it's like just a really nice way to get an idea of where you're at. Like if I look at some of the tight range spots that I feel more comfortable in and I get like, you know, an 88%, you know, accuracy rating, I can feel pretty good about how I'm playing from, you know, the low jack. And then like we move on, and then I see like a lower score come out in the blind v blind area. And that gives me something to like hone in on and pull the charts back up and dust off all the dust bunnies and get it sharpened up again. But that's pretty much it. I don't have a subscription to any other training site right now. I wouldn't be opposed to like being an affiliate for one and studying on one. But I don't have any relationships in place like that right now. I'm not working with anybody one-on-one. I used to, but we were focused mostly on 100 big blind cash and deep stack cash. So I've a lot of the opportunities I got through my media that I've been doing has been for like tournament buy-ins. So it's been really important for me to learn how to convert that into real dollars so we can keep the lights on. So I've been focusing a lot of my efforts and study on MTV, and I'll definitely have friends that I trust and I'll go over hand histories with, things like that. It was like the last argument I got in was one of my friends open shoved 18 bigs with 5-5 from the hijack. And I thought that was just a punt. And then all my friends disagreed and they're like, no, the solver wants you to do that. I'm like, in these fields.
Well, I'm guessing, Dara, maybe you can weigh in on this, like the way Caitlin sort of said how she uses the, you know, a lot of players, we've talked a bit about this actually on the show recently, a lot of players use these training apps to maybe just like check the hands they did. Did I make a mistake? It's almost like sort of a reassurance. It's almost like they're treating it like they want to pat on the shoulder. There, it's okay.
Whereas I don't run my hand histories.
Yeah, where it seems like much more formulaic the way you do it, and much more like what we were advocating in previous shows, Dara, that's the way, you know, you look at big blind v blind, you go button versus big, then you go button versus small, and, you know, take it from there.
Yeah, I do have a lot of students who come to me relatively fresh, and that's always good because it's a clean slate to work with. And I have a very, very sort of, not formulaic, but a very set way of like set up the framework and then just concentrate on the spots that come up the most often. Looking up your own hands is all well and good, and it certainly has a part to play, particularly as you get more experience and you know more of the bread and butter spots. But when you're starting, you really just want to concentrate on button versus big blind, 40 big blinds and less, and the other common scenarios that come up. You don't want to be looking at very outlier situations or even particularly deep stack situations, because for how long are you deep stacked in a tournament? To start and a little bit afterwards, and then you're into the shallow and the biggest mistakes. I think probably the most neglected area of tournament study, and the one that would actually make the most impact for most people, is to study ICM. Because relatively minor ICM mistakes can actually be massive punts in terms of equity. You know, there are spots where, let's say, ace jack is the bottom of the calling range, and folding ace jack might be a six buy-in mistake, and calling ace 10 might be a six buy-in mistake. So you really have to get those ranges nailed on. And yet it's the most neglected, because I think when the solvers came out, you know, appeal, etc., it was all chip EV, and therefore people got very good at studying chip EV. But that's not really that, it's not as big a factor in tournaments as ICM. Understanding ICM around bubbles and the last few tables, and particularly on the final table, that's super important. And I think the players who are the most studied in those areas will always have the biggest results. And you have some other players who are like, all the other stuff they do really, really well. They play deep stack really well. They play all the stack sizes really well. But then they come a cropper when it comes down to the business end. They just really don't know what to do. And it's not just a matter of like knowing when to call off, but even, you know, how to play the big stack, how you expand your range, how you should respond to other players, et cetera, et cetera. That's all very complex. And people don't study that for whatever reason as much as they should, I think.
And Caelan, back to you. You know, Dara's obviously sort of expounded on the importance of ICM. That would have been the one aspect of your game that you never had to think about as a cash game player and as someone who sort of needed to do her 100 big blind chip EV spots. That's your bread and butter in that world. Is ICM something you've honed in on a little bit more recently? Or do you sort of take the view that, you know, you can kind of nuance or wing them, those kind of spots laid on yourself anyway, just from maybe some guideposts you're aware of?
I definitely haven't neglected it entirely. I've definitely watched some videos. Landon Tice was doing these streams for a while where he would study on Twitch ICM spots at final tables. And he did that like twice. And I watched that like every minute he did of that and paid really close attention. And for the most part, it seems just like a lot of folding, but I don't want to like distill it down to make it, you know, that simple or whatever. But yeah, from what I get so far, it's like tighten up.
Yeah. Bigger fold, certainly, if you're in the medium or small sacks. And maybe, as Dara said there, knowing how to widen the ranges and the kind of hands to widen the ranges with when you're the one who can, the rabbit has the gun, is that the phrase? Yeah. Actually, speaking of Landon, you brought him up there. Are you on Team Landon for the Landon Becker upcoming?
You know, Jeremy Becker has been so freaking kind to me. He did an episode of Ace Holes. We have a common friend in common, Jake Farrow, who I've played with in Austin, who I absolutely adore. So I honestly don't feel comfortable publicly saying an allegiance either way because I like everybody involved.
That's perfectly fine. It's perfectly fine to like not want to see anyone get hurt. I think that's okay.
I feel like it's a lot of fun though. It's so super fun. Like the trash, it's good for the game. It's good for tournament poker. It drums up all this, you know, conversation and that's fun and lighthearted. I don't think Jeremy or Landon are going to get their feelings hurt by any of the little chirping that's going back and forth. So it just feels like good, healthy, like young men bucking antlers kind of a thing that I'm here for it. I'm fine. I'm rooting for both of them. I think most likely not a lot of money is going to change hands, but
yeah. When one of them gets like two min caches where the other one got one and then that gets separated.
I feel like statistics wise, there's a good chance of that happening, but it'll be a fun show. It'll be fun fodder all summer for all the different podcasts and media companies to eat up some time talking about. And I think they're both really hardworking, ambitious, funny, kind men, and I'm here for all of it. Good luck to the men, the young bucks.
Yeah, great lads, them both. Well, look, before we go, we've talked quite a lot about live poker today, so I want to direct you, the audience's attention, to the various different live tournaments into which you can satellite from Unibet Poker. Coming up in just 5 short weeks is the Malta Poker Festival main event, which is sponsored by Unibet DSO. Package and seat-only satellites are running for that on Wednesdays and Thursdays, and a reminder that those packages and seat satellites are all flexible, so they can be used for other DSO events if you prefer. In May, there's a stop in Lyon. In June, the tour goes to Barcelona. In July, San Remo. In September, Marrakesh. How do they sound? I know you travel the American circus, but any thoughts to come this part of the world, Caitlin? A bit of Barcelona maybe in June?
Y'all want to get me a bind and a flat and I'm there. It sounds a lot more glamorous than Council Bluffs and Tunica.
If that's all it costs, hold that thought. We will definitely we'll get on the blower to our manager for sure. Unibet are also partnered with the inimitable Frankie von Zweigbergk's festival series, which will be in Rozvodov in June, Malta in September, and Bratislava in November. Those package satellites are on Sundays. I actually won one of them last Sunday, illustrating how easy it is to win them. And again, all packages are flexible. Thank fuck, because I really don't want to have to go to Rozvodov. And I did ask Frankie if it was okay to say that before this interview. And he said it was okay, as long as they emphasized on how it was flexible. And that was one of the selling points. So there we go, Dara. They're not making me go to Rozvodov.
Yeah, I think that's probably a good thing. Both for you and for Rozvodov. But Malta and Bratislava are both very attractive stops. We both have very happy memories. You obviously live in Malta, so you're a little bit biased, but Bratislava is a lovely spot as well. I'm probably going there for an Irish poker tour stop immediately after Vegas this year.
Gosh, there is just so much live poker. I know you're going to Portugal for one before Vegas as well. So yeah, it just doesn't, there's no relent to the live poker. The boom is booming. Look, it remains for me to thank so much our guest this week, Caitlin Comiskey.
Thank you for having me.
Who, by the way, I believe having heard you speak recently, it's Comiskey in your part of the land. It would be Comiskey.
Yeah, how do the Irish people say my name?
Comiskey.
Yeah. I was doing the Irish pronunciation.
Yeah.
Comiskey works. I know who you mean. Comiskey is how I hear it most often in the States. Comiskey or Comiskey. But Comiskey is fine. I like it. It's a little more sing-songy.
Exactly. And Dara, thank you as usual for your contributions.
Thank you, David.